Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Kaf Beis B'Chodesh Malchezvan, Parashas Chayei Sara, Tashin Pei 5780, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 19 November 2019, webcasting from the criminal empire of the Jews in illegal occupation of Judea and Samaria in minds infected with the spiritual plague of anti-Jewitis. Most days, there is plenty of food for thought emanating from within Israel and the exile to comment on. Rarely is there nothing to think about out loud with you, and certainly not this evening, not after the bombshell yesterday of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo shamelessly, courageously, like the soldier he was, made a statement about Israel, and significantly the first sentence contained the sequence of words, quote, "The Trump administration is reversing the Obama administration's approach toward Israeli settlements," close quote. The world rocked at that this astonishing statement, this opposition to the international consensus, virtually universal on the planet, that the Jews have no right to live in Judea and Samaria, what is called the West Bank. Unfortunately, Secretary Pompeo used that language too, which was the downside to his otherwise heartwarming policy statement. Rightly, he cited the late, great President Ronald Reagan, who stood firm against calling Jewish life restored to Judea and Samaria illegal, but to please his anti-Jew State Department types, he admitted that they were not conducive to peacemaking, or words to that effect. Secretary Pompeo cited an historically American policy different from that of the world community, that while not specifically citing the anti-Semitic UN Security Council Resolution 2334 in December of 2016, he alluded to it when he said, quote, "Secretary Kerry changed decades of a careful bipartisan approach by publicly reaffirming the supposed illegality of settlements," close quote. He said, "This administration agrees with President Reagan. The establishment of Israeli civilian settlements in the West Bank is not per se inconsistent with international law," close quote. He went on to say that the ultimate status of the West Bank is for the Israelis and Palestinians to negotiate, close quote, and that was part of the downside of his otherwise heartwarming announcement. He said, quote, "The hard truth is that there never will be a judicial resolution to the conflict, and arguments about who is right and wrong as a matter of international law will not bring peace. This is a complex problem that can only be solved by negotiations between the Israelis and the Palestinians," close quote, and this is more of the downside of his statement. He is wrong to jettison respect for international law as something to be pursued. Doing that is conceding to the Muslim enemy. International law includes the League of Nations that drew up a map of Western Palestine as some of the historic homeland of the Jews they're entitled to live in. With Eastern Palestine, another Arab state was to be created in the post-World War I period, along with the Arab states of Lebanon, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, modern Syria. They all came into being after the war, including the future Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan on the East Bank. And it's that document that proves Judea and Samaria and Gaza, in international law, are the property of the Jews. And it is no shame to demand that the Ishmaelites respect the League of Nations decision. That continues to be a living legal instrument embedded in Chapter 80 of the UN Charter. But most of all, the otherwise splendid Mike Pompeo's performance was less than perfect, which it can never be when he uses vocabulary words like West Bank and Palestinians. He wants to see Israelis and Palestinians negotiate a peace which reinforces the negative anti-Jew construction of reality, that this conflict is between Israelis and Palestinians. No, it's between Jews and Arabs, between Jews and Muslims, and their Christian and post-Christian supporters around the globe, which just renewed the UN support for UNRWA, the greatest welfare scam in history, as part of the interminable hostility to Israel in the United Nations. Mike Pompeo was a four-year-old boy during the Six-Day War, meaning it was not a formative experience for him, and so he certainly had no experience either of the signing campaign of 1956, let alone the War of Independence in 1948. In those decades, the 50s and the 60s and into the 70s, the conflict was called the Arab-Israeli conflict. The Palestinians only entered the stage of history at the UN in 1970, and that's when the Arab-Israeli conflict was rebranded Israeli-Palestinian in order not to have to solve the Arab-Israeli conflict. UN Resolution 242 of November 1967 called for peace between the warring countries of the previous June, not one of them named Palestine. And as I show in my book, the invention of the Palestinians was rooted in the resistance to that Resolution 242. What the Arabs did was to invent a new national group, call it the principal victim of Zionism, and demand that Israel make peace with them first. And of course, the Palestinian refugees would never be satisfied with the existence of Israel. For two decades, the principal diplomatic effort was to get the PLO to accept Resolution 242, which Arafat refused to do because it said nothing of his ancient Palestinians. Arafat, this native Egyptian Muslim brother pretending to be an ancient Palestinian. Well, so much for the new Trump-Pompeo policy and its shortcomings. Its benefit does go to the heart of the matter, the heart of the conflict, in which world anti-Jewry resists the return of the Jews to Judea and Samaria and Jerusalem. That is what Obama and Kerry's UN knife in the back was all about. Not only did that resolution judge Jewish life reborn on barren hillsides dispossessing no ancient Palestinian to be a crime, the Jewish presence in Judea and Samaria, including the cave of the Jewish patriarchs and matriarchs, and the Temple Mount, the Jewish presence in all of these places, is a war crime. The Jews are in illegal possession of what belongs to the ancient Palestinians. That was the import of that poisonously anti-Semitic text. So I was most pleased that in Secretary Pompeo's first sentence, he fingered by name the secret Muslim Brotherhood agent Obama, whose anti-Jew policy the Trump administration was going to reverse. Thank God. God bless President Trump and Secretary Pompeo, both of whom I am confident see the anti-Semitism in a policy of denying Jews the right, because they are Jews, to live anywhere. It presupposes the rightness of dictating to Jews that there are certain places they have no right to live in. Post-World War II America, as the children of Yiddish-speaking refugees born and raised in America grew up and got educated and began to ascend the economic ladder, leave the tenements behind, and ascend to middle-class status. They went shopping for individual homes, and real estate advertisements might contain at the bottom the words, a restricted community, meaning no Jews allowed. This was the age of Gentleman's Agreement, a popular book and then movie. Yours truly grew up in a development where Jews were allowed in the new section, but not the old. Two houses away was the old section where Jews were denied purchase. And that is more or less the situation regarding Judea and Samaria, with today's anti-Semites oblivious to their own anti-Semitism by supporting the idea that Jews have no right to live in Judea and Samaria. Judea and Samaria are a restricted area. No Jews allowed. It's rumored that Donald Trump's father, though of German heritage, as a builder, developer in New York after the war, who wanted to sell to Jewish customers, he spread the word that the family was Dutch. Donald Trump knows the real estate business in New York and surely knows that certain condominiums on the Upper East Side of Manhattan for the rich are likewise Jew-free. I remember a case in 1979, I think it was, of anti-Semitism alleged by someone who claimed his claimed denial of purchase in one of these condos was anti-Semitic. I suspect both Trump and Pompeo sense the anti-Semitism of this international policy denying Jews the right to live on otherwise barren hillsides, displacing no allegedly ancient Palestinian family. It is ugly, and especially so when the League of Nations ruled as it did. Jews have nothing to be ashamed about when insisting that Judea and Samaria is legally and morally ours. And if the Goyim there, the aliens on this land, are unhappy, so they're unhappy. They're not the first human beings to be inconvenienced by the results of a war. There's nothing more natural and human, unfortunately, than wars, which often end with the altering of the lines between the warring parties. When that happens, some people find themselves overnight foreigners living in a new country, and they have the choice of living with that or moving back to be among their people. The upside of the Palestinian aggression against us, supported by world anti-Jewry, is that it is more evidence of the amazing, monumental, indeed cosmic power of Jewishness to move history. Has there ever been a phenomenon such as this, as the world community siding with an imaginary nation with its false claims to the Jews' homeland? It is the number one topic of discussion in the great glass temple of diplomacy in New York. The hostility to Israel has the upside of being evidence of the power of the Jewish idea that is so powerful it moves nations and history. So it was wonderful news yesterday, that statement issued by Secretary Pompeo, another exemplar of my experience with Italian-Americans, who are the least anti-Semitic of Americans, their historic Catholicism notwithstanding. His statement was a victory against anti-Semitism, which I think both he and President Trump see in this unjustifiable international certitude that Jews have no right to live in Judea and Samaria. On the other hand, I wish he had gone further by using the names found on all maps in history until the 1970s instead of West Bank. And I wish he had referred to the Goyim here as Arabs, as Muslims, anything but Palestinians, because using that label is counterproductive toward a better tomorrow, because it is a lie. There's nothing Palestinian about these people, which I find simply fascinating. This is the greatest historical hoax in the history of historical hoaxes. Everybody calls them Palestinians when there's nothing Palestinian about them. And attached to that fantasy, there are other verbal deceits that need to be deprogrammed and discarded on the junk heap of anti-Jew expressions down the corridors of time, such as the two-state solution, which is code for the destruction of Israel. Maybe you noticed it was highlighted, that expression, in virtually every Democratic presidential aspirant responding to Pompeo's statement. It's fascinating to me how the Democratic Party of my boyhood and my young manhood has become home to anti-Jew politicians such as Biden, Bernie, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, all of whom criticized the new policy, which is really the old policy, by referencing the damage it will do to the messianic two-state solution, which, when inspected under a microscope, reveals it to be truly malevolent towards the Jewish people. The two-state solution is as anti-Jew as the BDS movement, both concepts pretending to a lie. BDS pretends to care only for the West Bank, when all now agree this is a ruse, and so the devotees of the two-state solution likewise foresee a policy leading to the destruction of Israel, God forbid, disguised as supporting a state for the ancient ones that they have every right to. Though in fairness, I consider the possibility that with most of these Democrat aspirants for the presidency, these critics, except for Bernie, they don't know enough to know that the two-state solution in the minds of the Arabs and the Muslims means the driving of over 500,000 Jews from their homes and communities, from their synagogues and businesses, presumably housing them in refugee camps, I guess, after they're driven. Though where those camps will be built and how they will be funded is not considered. The two-state solution in the minds of the Arabs is the expulsion of all the Jews. And if Gaza is any example, it means the Muslim Brotherhood will take over and rule in the new state, whose borders will be within small arms fire of the Knesset in Jerusalem, as was the case before 1967, and no less within range of Ben Gurion Airport. The two-state solution means expelling more Jews from Judea and Samaria than were expelled from Spain in 1492, and the installation of the same regime today in control in Gaza. This is what Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden and Amy Klobuchar want to see. In fairness, I don't think so. I think none of them knows enough about Israel any more than what they see in the New York Times. The two-state solution is also a lie for its arithmetic. It's a five-state solution, in reality, as the first chapter of my book makes plain. Today's right-wing Jews complain that the Arabs got 77% of Palestine, far from the League. But what they got in historical fact was 77% of the map the League produced, which was a lie used to fool the Arabs. The League's map bore no serious relation to the maps of Palestine extant in 1917, before, in the middle of the war. What the League did was blow up that classical map, and it was that map that the Brits showed Abdullah, who as a Muslim had no concept of the shape and the boundaries of Palestine. They used it to fool him into thinking he was getting 77% when in historic fact, the final lines of the states that came into existence after World War I show today 53% of the classic map of Palestine is in Lebanese, Syrian, and Jordanian territory. The two-state solution was also, we should not forget, the brainchild of Dr. Joseph Balin, Ph.D., the atheist, and his atheist cohorts, for whom the invention of the Palestinians was a most useful tool to prevent religious Jews from bringing Judea and Samaria back to life. Balin and company were the offspring of post-religious Jews whose Zionism was a rebellion against Jewishness, rooted in fidelity to the commandments found in a book the Jews believe was dictated by the Creator in the 14th century before the Common Era, versus these enlightened Israelis who poo-pooed that belief as the opium of the masses. Likewise, Ron Pundak, like Balin, was a confirmed communist who once admitted that their peace plan, the Oslo Plan, was mostly not about peace with the Palestinians, but preventing religious people from creating new communities in Judea and Samaria. In this, these Israeli Jews were in perfect agreement with anti-Jew goyim around the world in their hostility to the Zionist project. Not surprisingly, unlike the others I named, who are likely anti-Jew through ignorance and fashion, far more than conviction, Bernie Sanders was among the worst of the Democrat politicians in responding. Quote, he said, "Israel, settlements in occupied territory are illegal. This is clear from international law and multiple United Nations resolutions. Once again, Mr. Trump is isolating the United States and undermining diplomacy by pandering to his extremist base," close quote. That's right, Bernie, it's extremist to support the right of Jews who live in Judea and Samaria. It's more anti-Semitism, Bernie, when you lie about occupied territory when it has been obvious since 1967 that the conditions do not exist to apply the definition of occupied territory to Israel's presence on land the League of Nations, forerunner of the United Nations, awarded to the Jews. Bernie, like all in his community of anti-Jew haters, asserts the new Jewish communities are illegal in international law without ever citing that law or laws in what book of laws one can find it or them in order to read for oneself and agree or disagree the relevance of these laws to Israel's situation. It's nothing more than toxic words for being mendacious. And when the target is the Jews, this is anti-Semitism, Bernie. You are an anti-Semite, one who lies about Jews. One of the lies being your claim that since your father's family was killed in the Holocaust, you are immune to anti-Semitic thinking, which is pure glot kosher horse manure.
V'atem hadvekim b'Hashem Elokechem chayim kulchem ayom. V'atem hadvekim b'Hashem Elokechem chayim kulchem ayom. Hayom te'ametzenu, hayom tevarechenu, hayom tidreshenu letova, hayom tetarenu, hayom telabevenu, hayom tishma tfilatenu. Ba'Hashem Elokechem chayim kulchem ayom. V'atem hadvekim ba'Hashem, o ba'Hashem chayim kulchem ayom. Hayom te'ametzenu, hayom te'gadelenu, Tishma tfilatenu. אתם הדבקים בהשם אלוקיכם חיים כולכם היום ואתם הדבקים בהשם או בהשם
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. So, in a class with Bernie Sanders, was one of the nastiest anti-Jew Jews in our time, Dr. Martin Indyk. He tweeted, quote, "A totally gratuitous move by a discredited Secretary Pompeo. Why slap the Palestinians in the face again? Why boost the settlement annexation movement at the very moment Gantz is trying to form a government? This has Friedman's fingerprints on it," close quote. That's very true, and proudly so. The story includes the goading by Ambassador David Friedman of the State Department in cahoots with Israeli Ambassador in Washington Ron Dermer. Both of them pushed for this policy reversal, even more important than moving the embassy to Jerusalem. Far more important. Along with Indyk in his hostility to the right of Jews to live in Judea and Samaria without displacing any Muslims, was Jeremy Ben-Ami of J Street, who also waved the banner of the two-state solution, now in jeopardy thanks to the reversal of Obama's nasty policy. And I think that the next step for pro-Israelites should be a war on the very language, two-state solution. We need a verbal version of the Iron Dome system to knock down the very concept of the profoundly dishonest anti-Jew idea disguised as something positive. Yes, let us build a state for the ancient ones who are as entitled to a state in Palestine as the Jews. It'd be a wonderful contribution to create a brand new state of ancient Philistia. Who could complain against such a noble idea? Statehood for the ancient ones. For a state right next to Israel. Returning the state of Israel in the process to its 1949 dimensions, 9 miles wide at its waist. The two-state solution sounds so nice because it is a solution, the only solution the left insists. When the MSM quotes an Arab here over a real estate clash with Israel, a property dispute somewhere, the land is always described as, quote, land the Palestinians want for their future state, close quote. What is never broadcast is the rest of their aspiration. They want the land for their future state, which they will use to destroy the Jewish state. That never gets broadcast. And last but not least, the AIPAC response was further evidence of the dying via assimilation of the American Jewish community. AIPAC is for those Jews who may want the best for Israel, even though they do not live Jewish lives themselves. On the contrary, they fool themselves and assuage their consciences by thinking support for Israel by joining AIPAC is a substitute for not living as religious Jews. Since most in this community vote Democrat and voted against Trump, AIPAC's CEO Howard Kaur, who lives off the donations of comfortable Jews who marry off their children to Gentiles and thus contribute to the shrinking of the Jewish people, conducted an historic AIPAC annual meeting, the first after Trump became president, during which he broke with the AIPAC tradition of supporting whatever government and its policies at the moment was ruling in Jerusalem. Kaur, for the first time, remained loyal to the Obama policy of a two-state solution rather than Netanyahu's policy, de facto opposed to the two-state fantasy deception. Supporters of Israel today must target the two-state solution idea as the embodiment of the fiasco that was the Oslo abomination, whose goal was handing over Judea and Samaria to our mortal Arab-Muslim enemies because they did not like being sneered at by the in-crowd in Paris, London, and New York, and the United Nations as a whole. Zionism for them was about creating a new Jew who would not be hated and persecuted. And the way to that goal for the Oslo freaks was agreeing that Zionism was a form of racism that had victimized the poor, putatively prehistoric Palestinian people.
לעלות בסולמות ועל הרי שומרות
So it was a banner day with reservations. And I'll be back, God willing, on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.